The following message is from Christ Community Church in Athens, Georgia. For more information and sermons, go to www.christ-community.com. Thank you for listening.
You know, life without Jesus is pretty great until it isn't. I think if you walk through some of our stories, we'll tell you that what happened in our life is that we got ruined by our circumstances. That things happened to us that hurt us, confused us. Some of us made decisions throughout our life as we were living this great life. Those decisions became problematic for us, and we became overwhelmed by the challenges that we created for ourselves. Sometimes the great life that we have without Jesus gets ruined by our circumstances, but what happens when our life without Jesus gets ruined because we come into contact with Jesus? You see, one of the things is when we talk about people becoming Christians, we oftentimes like to talk about the circumstances that lead them to that decision. What I find when I read the scriptures and when I walk through history is that what is consistently true is people who become followers of Jesus at some point in time come into contact with Jesus. You see, when we come face to face with the real Jesus, when he walks into our life, one of two things happens. We either follow him or we reject him. Now, we may take a season where we consider who he is and what he's done, but at some point in time, that consideration always leads us to a decision. We either follow him or we reject him, because when we come into contact with the real Jesus, we can't ignore him. And so what happens in the life of every single person who comes into contact with the real Jesus is when that happens, they either become more hopeful or they become more haunted by him. Now, I bring that out for a couple of reasons. One is because you're here, and I'm here, and we're here. And I want you to see in this text, we're going to come into contact with the real Jesus. And so you're going to walk out of this room having come into contact with him as we dive into this part of the Bible we call 1 Peter chapter 2. And you're either going to walk away more hopeful or more haunted. But I also want us to talk about the real Jesus because he is the reason why this church exists. For the past couple of weeks, we have talked about our church. It's kind of a resetting for us. It's a refocusing on things that have been true for us for a long time. And so for those of us who have been here for 28 years, for those of us who are here and it's your first time, this is helpful for us because when we think about this church, then what we're able to say clearly are things like, we are here to follow Jesus together. And what we saw last week is that if we're going to follow Jesus, he's taking us to the nations. So as a church, as a group of people, we're going to drill deep here in Athens, and we're going to reach wide. We're going to work, and we're going to partner with other people to start new churches around the world so that anybody and everybody has an opportunity to hear the good news of the real Jesus. What I want to nail down today for us is why we follow Jesus together. So if you're taking notes, if you're like, okay, so what are we talking about today? Here it is. I mean, this is the question. You'll see this on the screen. Why do we follow Jesus together as a family? Why do we do that? Here's the answer, and then I want to show it to you in Peter. The reason why we follow Jesus together is to make the real Jesus impossible to ignore. Here in Athens and beyond. So we are here to follow Jesus together. And the reason why we do that is to make the real Jesus impossible to ignore. Let me show you how this works. So what you heard earlier, as Clint read these 10 verses, what you heard are words that are 2,000 years old. This man, Peter, is a real person. He was one of Jesus' closest friends. He became a leader in the early church in the first century, and he writes this letter to churches that are in modern-day Turkey, and these are churches that constitute, made up largely of non-Jewish people. For a lot of human history, the people of God, of Yahweh, of what we would call the biblical God, are almost largely exclusively Jewish people. But what's happening here after the death and resurrection of Jesus is people go out and they start inviting non-Jewish people in. And so these group of people to whom Peter is writing are among those people. They become part of the church. They're non-Jewish people who have come to believe that this Jewish man named Jesus is the ultimate ruler, the ultimate king, the ultimate Caesar, if you will, as people living in the Roman Empire, and that he is, in fact, the one true God. That cost them a lot. Because while there are seasons later on in the life of this church and of the church of God where people would suffer governmental persecution, they would be tortured and killed because of their faith in Jesus, Peter, earlier in this letter, describes fiery trials, and this isn't that. This is the pain that comes from your family and your friends rejecting you. In a culture where your economic dependence was built on your family, because you are part of the family business. And so what happens when, because of your faith in Jesus, your family tells you to go away? These people have been rejected and shunned. They are experiencing pain, and you've heard me say this before. There's no difference in your mind between physical pain and emotional pain and psychological pain. Pain is pain is pain, and it hurts. And so what's gotten into the hearts and minds of these people is the fact that they're wondering, okay, is this really worth it? Is this really true? Is this good for me? Is this the way that I'm supposed to live? And so Peter writes to these people who are wondering if they even belong in the family of God. And what he does at the beginning of this letter and what you read in these 10 verses was him pulling imagery from all over the Old Testament to communicate two things. One is that Jesus is the fulfillment of an old, ancient story. And that you, as non-Jewish people, you absolutely belong to this family. Your life and our life together makes the real Jesus impossible to ignore. Here's how. And I want you to pay attention because we're not just talking about a group of people living 2,000 years ago. We're talking about you. This is one of the most phenomenal things about the scriptures that I think we can miss so easily. When we go, this really is irrelevant, doesn't have anything to do with me. Here is a message that transformed the lives of people 2,000 years ago. And you go generation to generation and culture to culture for 2,000 years and as long as we live until Jesus returns. And these words will transform people like us. When you look at verse 9, Peter says, this is what the church is. He says, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession. We'll come back and talk about those in a minute. But then he says that, okay? It's a purpose statement. Why are you the church? That you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Why do we exist as a church? What is our purpose? To proclaim the excellencies of him who called us out of darkness into his marvelous light. Great. What does that mean? It means that if we belong to Jesus, we talk about Jesus. We tell people about Jesus. This doesn't talk about how, and you won't hear Peter hammering these people for not being more evangelistic. He just takes it for granted that if something amazing has happened to you, if something amazing has happened in your family, you're going to talk about it, right? Friday night, there was a senior in high school, 18-year-old boy named Jake. He plays football for the Vestavia Hills Rebels in Birmingham, Alabama. Happens to be the football team that my father-in-law has coached for 46 years. Jake has Down syndrome. His freshman, sophomore, junior year, he was manager for the team. His parents called my father-in-law over the summer and said, you know, Jake would love to dress out just one time. And my father-in-law said no. He said, I'd love for Jake to be part of the team. Now, you know there's no way that I can put him on the field, though, because the realities of Down syndrome, he wouldn't be able to protect himself, and we wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. And he said, I've known Jake for 3 years, and the truth is, I don't think he'd want honorary anything. But here's the deal. If Jake comes to summer workouts, and if Jake wants to practice, then Jake can put on the uniform every Friday. He won't get to play, but he'll get to wear the uniform. Jake showed up at every workout, except for one this summer. Jake shows up at practice. When the team runs gassers, he runs gassers. When they do walkthroughs, he gets on the field. They'd even put him at tailback on walkthroughs, because what he didn't know was my father-in-law had an idea. Friday night, they were playing their preseason scrimmage against another team in Birmingham, and the coach is a good friend of my father-in-law's, and so my father-in-law said, hey, it's a scrimmage, so at the last play of the game, told him Jake's story, and so what happens is on the last play of the game, Jake got to go on the field. Put him at tailback, the one play that Jake knows. Jake has no idea what's going on, because it's like, I thought I wasn't supposed to be in the game. The quarterback had to tell him 3 times what the play is. Toss left, and off Jake goes. Running 55 yards for a touchdown. With both teams chasing him down the field, cheering him on. My wife talked to my father-in-law yesterday, and it was on SportsCenter. I think Jake's going to be on Ellen at some point in time in the next couple of weeks. I mean, it's all over the place, right? The whole thing's gone viral. And my father-in-law, who has won state championships and has won more football games in the state of Alabama than any other high school coach in the history of high school football in Alabama, said that was the happiest moment in 46 years. Now, why do I tell that story? One, it's a great story. But second, because I'm proud to be part of Buddy Anderson's family. Why do we talk about Jesus? Because it's a great story. And we're proud to be part of his family, right? Now, some of you don't like the fact that Christians are sitting in a room like this and talking about going out and telling people about Jesus. You don't like the idea of proselytizing. You shouldn't do that. Well, maybe we could understand it this way. So we want to tell people about Jesus. You don't want us to tell about Jesus. You say we're proselytizing, and I would say so are you. See, because we have this belief that's deep inside our heart about something that's good and right for people, and of course we want to tell you about it because we want to persuade you, we want to change your mind, we want you to be part of this with us. And so when you say, no, you can't do that, what you're saying is actually the same thing. You have this belief deep in your heart about what is good and right in the world, and you want to convince us as Christians to see things through your perspective because you believe that if we would change our mind and follow and live the way that you're living, that would be better for us. We're doing the same thing, right? Now, you might come back and go, well, look, here's the deal. Can we really talk about the details of why I don't want you Christians talking about being a Christian? I mean, first off, can we talk about the fact that this book is just a bunch of myths and fables, right? Now, look, I have no problem. I have graduate degrees, and we could talk about how the Bible was put together, and we could get into the details of that. But you know what I'd really like to do? I'd really like to just tell you about Jesus. You look at the world around us and what's been done in the name of Christianity. The fact that there's a long history of Christians who mistreat people who are different than them. I don't know what to do with a picture of a church with a banner in the back over the baptistry like that that says Jesus saves, and standing behind the pulpit where the scriptures would be preached are 40, 50, 60 Ku Klux Klansmen. I don't know what to do with that, but it makes me angry, just like you're angry. But before we dive into that, can we talk about Jesus first? I can read the Bible just like you, and so when you come and you tell me that you can't follow Christ, you can't be a Christian because you read through parts of this book and you see the God that we say we believe in, the God who we say is loving, wiping out entire groups of people, I will be the first to admit that if you gave me the opportunity to write the script, I would never write the script that way. I'm with you. And your questions about things that don't seem to make sense and don't resonate with the world we live in are true and valid and deserve an honest response. But it would be okay with you if we talked about Jesus first. Because I think if you see Jesus and you see him as one who did not walk in wiping out entire people groups, but died for every people group, that maybe it might give us some way of thinking about the bigger picture of what we see in the scriptures. I know you think that no serious person believes in God. And I could certainly argue with you. I could walk through history and see some rather intelligent, serious people having real serious conversations about the existence of God. But can we just go ahead and say that for most of us, we aren't going to spend the bulk of our time arguing about the existence of God? Can we talk about who Jesus is? And if you're here and you're not sure about Christianity and you're wondering, why would you do this? Like, why can we not talk about Jesus? What is the driver for us? Okay, so here's what it goes. Here's how it goes, okay? So what we have found in the Bible is a system of living. And what we believe is that if we will work hard enough and try hard enough and live well enough, that God will give us rewards. And we even have a hashtag called blessed that will help you understand that this is the heart of Christianity. If you will just try harder and be better than those other people, then guess what? God will reward you. He will bless you. No. That looks nothing like this. That looks nothing like Jesus. It looks nothing like Christianity. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9 says, we proclaim the excellencies of him who has brought us out of darkness and into his light. You see, every story is different. Every person is unique. Your background and my background are not the same. But this is what I come to know, that every single person who understands we come to understand that we have been overwhelmed by darkness. It's why we all love Amazing Grace and singing that once I was blind, but now I see. It's why we can read parts of the scriptures like Ephesians chapter 2 and hear that we were once dead, and we get it. We get the fact that I don't care whether it's our thinking, our feeling, our decision-making, that no matter what it is, that we are flawed and we are broken and we've been overwhelmed by the darkness. And then Jesus walks into our life and he says things like, you know I made you, right? Even the quirky little parts of you. I made you because I want you to know what it feels like to be loved. That's why God made everything. He didn't need us. But he wanted you and me and us and everyone and everything in this world to know what it feels like to be loved the way that he knows what it feels like to love and be loved. And then he walks into your life at some point in time and he tells you things like, you know, I came to the earth and I lived for you and I died for you. I've been pursuing you since before your great, 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 great grandparents were even alive. And then at some point in time in your life, through the haze and the flood of that darkness. For some of us, it was instantaneously, and for some of us, it was over chapters and seasons of our life. All of a sudden, the lights come on. Some of you have heard me tell the story about I met my wife 2 years before the moment. And we knew each other. We knew who each other were. We may have had a handful of conversations, but I still can remember the one day in which she walked through some doors and fireworks. Might as well have been literal. And while my story and our story is different than different people's story, for me, the fireworks went off, the lights came on, and I was done. There was never anybody else. Now that is real and powerful 21 years later for me. If that's true of one human being with another, how powerful is it when Jesus comes in and he turns the lights on? You see why we end up talking about Jesus? Not because we have to, but because how can we not? But because when we come to understand what's happened and who he is and what he's done for us, it's an amazing story. We're humbled by it. We can't shake him. And so what happens is, and this is the way that God works, this is the way that Jesus makes himself impossible to ignore in this world, is what happens is that he makes himself impossible to ignore in your life, and then you start telling other people, and then he becomes impossible in their life, and then they start telling other people, and then there are fewer and fewer and fewer people in this city and beyond who can ignore Jesus because we're talking about something that is amazing. That's our purpose as a church, to make the real Jesus impossible to ignore. Now, I want to talk about our plan as a church. So I want you to imagine visually a triangle, okay? Triangle. And if you're taking notes, then you could write the words up, in, and out. Up. There's an orientation in my life towards God. In, there's an orientation in my life towards other Christians, particularly those who are part of the church that I'm a part of. And out, there's an orientation towards the world around us, okay? Now let me show you how I see that here in 1 Peter 2. If you look at verse 9, we're told here that the church of Jesus is a royal priesthood, okay? Now, that is talking about a group of people, but guess what? It's a group of people, which means that the individuals who make up that group are part of this, which means you are royalty. You're a king, you're a queen. Do you know what kings and queens do? Do you know what the most deep design of royalty is? If you have power, you use it to protect people. You're a king, you're a queen. Use what God's given you to protect people. The church is a priesthood. I could spell out a 2.5-page job description of what a priest does, but here's what priests do. Priests serve. They sacrifice. They lay down their lives for the sake of other people. Now again, we said this is the church. The church is a royal priesthood. It is a chosen race. It's a holy nation. It's a people who belong to God. And there's a purpose behind that, and the fact that we proclaim so that not only are we kings and priests, but we're also prophets. We have been given words about God to share with other people. So this is the way it comes together in our plan. There is a trajectory upward towards God. We talk about Jesus. That's what we do. There's an orientation inward for us that we tell the truth. We protect one another. We're kings that are royalty. Basically, we exist to protect the people around us. And we have an orientation outward that says we are here to serve the world around us. This is our plan, up, in, and out. We talk about Jesus, we protect one another, and we serve the world. Because the Bible says so. And it's also true because we are a holy nation. That just makes all kinds of, you know, red alerts and alarms go off about white supremacy and nationalists and things like that. So we better get our head on straight when we talk about being a holy nation. So here's what these words mean. Holy is not primarily about your morals, even though it includes that. Holy means different. It means peculiar. It means separate. It means that we are set apart by God as a nation. The word there originally is the word ethnos. We are an ethnicity. And we are an ethnicity in such a way that who we are and how we wired an ethnicity gives us a perspective on the world. What God has done in His church is that He gives us a perspective in which we're able to see the world the way that God sees the world. So we can say and sing with our brother from 30 years ago, we do believe in the kingdom come. When all the colors will bleed into one. Not because we're colorblind. If you use that card, will you please put it away? Because it sounds nothing like Jesus. You see, when we talk about every single color, every single race and ethnic group, every single culture, every single class coming together, it doesn't mean that we put away the beauty of God's design and diversity. You have to make a decision whether you see the color of somebody's skin as some kind of defect or if it's part of God's perfectly beautiful design to display His glory and make Him impossible to ignore. But what combines us together, what brings us together, what unites us is not only our celebration of diversity, which the entire world wants to do on some level, but we, by God's grace, are able to see what He sees, and we're able to see underneath our skin and underneath our class. We don't throw them away, but we see with this, we see underneath it, and we see the image of God weaving itself together into this beautiful tapestry that we call the kingdom of God. Y'all, we get to be part of this tapestry called the church. There is no greater privilege that we have in this world than to live this way. And that privilege comes with a promise. You can miss it here. Peter got all of this stuff. Chosen race, royal priesthood, holy nation, people for His own possession. He got all of that from the Old Testament. I want to read just one part of the Bible, three verses from the book of Exodus in chapter 19, and just be listening to see if some things sound familiar, okay? This is chapter 19, Exodus, verses 4 to 6. God says to His people, "You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." Sound familiar? What does it mean? It means that God walks into a room like this and says, "Please hear me. I am with you." Because He says in verse 4, "I brought you to myself." And so individually, as you go out and you live this up in and out life and you talk about Jesus and you protect other people who are followers of Jesus and you serve the world around you, God is with you. But it also means us together, when we orient our lives upward and we worship God together, God is with us. When you hear the Bible read in a call to worship, which is why you should be here at 9 o'clock and not 9:15, God is speaking. When we read the Bible, when we read 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 1 to 10, when I read out of Exodus, God is speaking. When we come to this table, it isn't just that we're remembering that Jesus died. We are putting tangible evidence in our hands that says, not only do you hear God loves you, but He's with you. You're holding Him. He's using this multi-sensory experience that we call a worship gathering that doesn't need lights and smoke, even though it's no problem if you have lights and smoke, but you don't need it because He's here. and he's with us when we worship together. He's with us as we live together. You heard me say earlier that we protect one another. We keep ourselves accountable to the life God has called us to live. So God is with us, and that is what enables us. Sometimes when we're hurt and frustrated by other people, God is with us, and he says, hey, they're trying their best. Some of us look at what other people are doing on social media, the way they parent, the way they live their life, what they do, what they see, what they say, what they believe, and you go, that's garbage. Do you believe that people are trying their best? And if God is with us, maybe that's what gives us the courage to walk in and go, hey, so I've seen this, I heard that. Can we talk about it? I don't understand. Guys, I love our church. If you're new to our church, this is a fun season to be part of. If you've been around for a while, I think you'd agree with me that this is a phenomenal season of life for our church. On the surface, we're friends and we're family, and things are going well. I will tell you that beneath the surface, we have problems and we have trouble that's coming because some of us are not being honest with one another. Some of us have deepening divisions and frustrations with other people in this room. And we forget that God is with us, and so we fail to assume the best of others, and we fail to have those hard conversations. But we can do it because God is with us. God is with us as we go to the world. We serve together. We lay down our lives for the sake of other people. God is with us. We are Christ Community Church. We have a purpose. We exist to make the real Jesus impossible to ignore. We have a plan. This up in out life that we live individually and together. And we have this promise that God says, you have everything that you need together because you have me. One last thing as we leave. I think if you're walking out of here and you're listening well, you should be thinking to yourself, I should be more involved in this thing called church. You should be saying things like, I should be living the kind of life that makes Jesus impossible to ignore. I should be talking about Jesus, and I should be protecting other Christians. I should be loving and sacrificing my life for the world around me. I should be part of this thing called Christ Community where we're worshiping together and living together and serving together. You should be hearing that. Why aren't we doing that? Why is there, in real ways, is there failure personally and collectively for us to look like and be the people of God? I mean, we have a purpose. We have a plan. We even have a promise. God help us. I think, and I'm most guilty of this, of relying on my own power. If we're going to live this out, you need to know two things. One, both of these in verse 9. You are a chosen race. Again, white nationalist alarm bells go off. I don't mean that you are like the best, the choice cut of meat. I mean that we are, in so many ways, the scrawniest, most untalented. Nobody has picked us. Nobody will pick us. Nobody's going to choose this group of people to be part of transforming the city and changing the world. Nobody's going to grab us and do that because we're ordinary people living everyday lives. Very few of us are going to end up on the front page of a website or on the cover of a magazine. We're just ordinary. We're just here. We're just trying to make it. But the God of the universe says, look, I choose you. The power to live out our purpose and our plan and believe in this promise comes from the power of God that says, you didn't choose me. I chose you. And then secondly, this phrase, and it's a terrible translation, but when you look at 1 Peter chapter 2, And we're told, you are a people for his own possession. It's a bad translation. Exodus 19 puts it better when the God of the universe looks at you and me and us and says, you shall be my most treasured possession. Out of all the fantastical things that exist in the universe that God created, out of all the things that God could say, look at that. Some of us spent time, energy, money going and watching an eclipse. By the way, it sounds like totality was cool. 98.7% here in Athens. It's okay. God never looks at you and goes, it's okay. You and me and us together as his church, we are his most prized possession. There's a story about a man named Hosea. Ordinary guy, nothing really that stands out about him. God comes to him and says, I want you to marry a woman named Gomer. Interesting name. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that you're going to marry her and she's going to be unfaithful to you. And the reason why I want you to marry her and the reason why she's going to be unfaithful is because Hosea, I'm God and I'm Hosea. I've made a commitment, I've pursued, I've persuaded, I've wooed, I've romanced a bride, a people, and they're unfaithful. Hosea, your wife is going to be unfaithful time and time again. She's going to leave and she's going to come back and you're going to forgive her and she's going to run away again. And one day she's not going to come back. And sure enough, that's the story of Hosea and Gomer. She's unfaithful. She comes home, she leaves again, unfaithful, unfaithful, unfaithful. She even has children with other men. Their names translated mean no mercy and not my people. Eventually she runs off and at some point in time, we don't know whether it's days, weeks, months, years, that what we find out is that Gomer has moved from man to man. Some of them have rejected her, some she's rejected, and she's at a place, we don't know the details, we just know that Hosea is told by God, tomorrow Gomer is going to be auctioned off and sold as a slave, so here's what you're going to do. You are going to go down there, and among all of your townspeople who know your story and who know how she's been unfaithful to you and how she's cheated on you, how it's broken your heart, you're going to buy her back and you're going to love her. And he does. Now, if that sounds eerily familiar like the storyline of Forrest Gump, here's where it goes differently. If you remember the story of Forrest and Ginny, Ginny keeps running away and coming back to Forrest and running away and coming back, but eventually she dies a broken woman in his arms. We're not told what happens after Homer buys back Gomer. Hosea buys. I've been doing that all the time in prep, y'all. The story ends with go buy her back and love her. And that's the end of the story. Why? Because that's when you need to see that this is your story. You see, when 1 Peter 2, verse 10 says, here's the good news. Once you are not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you have not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. You are his most prized possession, and you have been unfaithful. And yet you do not deserve mercy, but now you have mercy. You rejected him. You have said, I don't want to be part of your people, but now you are his people. Why? Because this is what he does. You see, the reason why we don't trust in his promises and work his plan and live for his purposes is because we're so preoccupied and our mind and our hearts are so swayed by other things. The reason why we don't live our lives together as the people of God, the reason why Jesus can be ignored in ways that he shouldn't be ignored in your life and my life, through your life and my life, in this church and through this church, is because we have had our heads turned by other promises and other plans and other purposes. And so what's the solution? It won't work for me to stand up on this table and yell at you, because you know what? I can do that to me and it doesn't change me. And here's my conviction. If I can't change myself, I got no shot at changing you. So God says, here's what happens. You're chosen. If you're here, you didn't move first, God moved first. You are holy. You're set apart. You're God's most prized possession. And the reason we come in here week in and week out and time again is so that you can come and you can hear and you can see God say, I love you. I'm for you. I made you. I'm pursuing you. I live for you. I died for you. I chose you. You're mine. And when you see that, when you take it in, when it begins to get into your head and your heart, what happens in moments and seasons and over lifetimes is that you and I began to be the church. Guilt will not help us. Shame only moves us further away. It is only the grace of Jesus that we see on a bloody cross and an empty tomb that says, okay, now. Now, I can trust your promises. Now, I find within me the desire and some small ability to work your plan. Now, I can trust in your promises because I have your power. Your love for me is what empowers my love for you and for the world around me.